Hello and welcome to Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch, in which two nerds sit on a couch and discuss science fiction and fantasy. Okay, so this is Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch talking about Insurgent.
And I want to thank that one person who listened to our podcast that
A lot
of people are like, hey, you know, I'm humbled and awed by our 100,000th visitor or whatever. But I'm like, honestly, I'm humbled and awed that anybody
found it
in the first place because it was unnamed podcast for.
Yeah, you know.
That's fine. But now we're talking about Insurgent, which is it starts with a haircut.
It starts with a haircut. Oh,
so
man.
It's her Manic Pixie Daunt Girl. Haircut.
Have you been saving that one up?
I did. Yeah, that was my initial. I didn't even tell you the joke at the time because I wanted it to have more impact.
Good. I'm
now,
glad. Thank
you're welcome.
You.
So they all go out to Amity and put on hippie clothes to blend in because there has been a huge shakeup in the political structure and Erudite is still in charge.
Yeah, because I think that they managed to wriggle out from being responsible for that. Like, oh, it was too bad that Dauntless went crazy and tried to shoot Abnegation.
Yeah, but I mean, they're smart. They'll spin it. It'll be fine.
No, I mean, that's
the problem is that, like, they would have been in charge in the first place anyway. I mean, there's no way that they wouldn't have.
It's
because
fine.
If they're smart, they'll be in charge. But,
So our Dauntless people, and then also, like, I think Marcus is there, and so is Caleb.
Yeah, they're all just sort of hiding out in some Amity village out in the middle of nowhere, and it's just sort of like,
it's not a happy mix, because...
Right, you can't mix the factions. Are you kidding me? Nobody would get along.
because they're like, you know... they're too busy, like, punching people and jumping off of stuff.
No, I mean, like, we can't even handle two political parties, let alone five. and then the outsider anarchists, you know what I mean? Like, this is a serious powder keg waiting to happen. But they're, you know, I mean, they're just sort of, waiting for the Humvees to show up.
So just, like, so before, you know, everybody comes in to ruin it, but this is just sort of, like, setting the scene where she gets to have her dream of, you know, the, oh, God, I got my parents killed and blah. And then she decides to cut her own hair. And this is another one of those things that freaking coronavirus has taught us, is that when you go to cut your own hair, it doesn't look like it does when she's done with it. There's a reason this is a podcast.
Yeah.
And part of that is that I cut my own hair.
Well, and that I don't cut my own hair. It's just not cut.
No.
It's just easier not to. But yeah, I mean, like, I can't believe she couldn't find a single... hairdresser in Amity. I'm presumably because all of the hairdressers are in Dauntless with the tattoo artists.
Anyway, so that the idol of hanging out with happy farmers who apparently are not whatever. The jerks from Dauntless come rolling in, and like I just kind of can't believe this. They come in and they start like knocking down the fences, and they're like is that really any way to treat the happy farmers? Like, now the horses are going to get out, and, you know, it's just awful. Anyway, so they show up, and they're
I mean,
like,
if you want an insurgency, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
They're not winning hearts and minds here.
No, they really aren't. And so they're like, yeah, we're here to find the divergence, and we're going to shoot everybody up with this drug that makes we can tell who the divergents are or whatever.
No, it was a little holograph gun. It was a hologram gun. I don't think they had to inject them with anything.
Well, whatever.
And it would even give you, like, a percentage of how divergent you were. It's like now, all of a sudden, it's not just whether you're divergent or not. It's how divergent are you? I mean, it's possible that, maybe you could be, like, you know, Amity Candor, you know, or, like...
Right, right. 10%. Anyway.
Or I don't know how you would ship the, like, Candamity. Is that how it would be?
Yeah, ship it. Anyway, so our heroes run away, and they jump onto a train,
Wait, I have a thing about the train.
Okay.
The thing about trains is they're incredibly efficient, right? You have an engine up front and you just drag as many things as you want behind it, right? So this train is, there's three tracks because, which actually wouldn't work because there's four tracks. Like two tracks side by side, but the two middle tracks are exactly one train width apart because the engine rides on those and drags a double wide stack of trains behind it. There is absolutely no reason in the world you would ever engineer a system like this. It is just mind-bogglingly dumb that you would do something like this, because the whole point of doubling it up would be to what? Why not just add them to the end? Trains can be infinitely long. There is no reason that you would want to make these double wides. And they're completely separate train tracks, right? They're separate cars. Like, the only reason would be is if you wanted to transport really wide stuff, but they're not doing that. They're just, it's just two strings of trains.
Your ability to, like, nitpick minutia that, like, I have literally never noticed.
This is not minutia. It was like, let's see, how can we make, somebody at some point was like, what's the most sci-fi train you can think of? And instead of bullet train that moves super fast, because obviously you need to be able to run and get on this. So it's a bunch of cattle cars, but it's like, what if we made them like too wide? Because like that's real futuristic. And like, I don't know why trains today don't do that. And the reason is because there was nobody in the world, no engineer would be like, that's a good idea.
Ugh. Well, anyway, you're weird.
So they jump on this train full of, somehow factionless people. They're all like riding on the train, stealing stuff because... How does that even work? Where's the train going? It's on tracks. It's not like you can hijack it and take it somewhere else.
I know, right.
But it's going where it's going.
You can't question it. It's not.
There's a lot of things I can't question.
You have to stop looking at the dog. So, so they get on and there's nobody on the train. And then a minute later, there's like 50 people. And then they have to like have a bunch of punch fights with.
And it's like factionless people. And it's like. Come on, there's two, like, military, like, dauntless, hazing-trained, daunt-fu experts.
Well, and then...
There's no way they couldn't beat up a bunch of punks. And
they
punks,
do. They completely, you know? They completely wipe the floor with them.
They do.
And then...
Well, and then they get to the huge factionless city.
Oh, and that's the point when...
Because he's like, I'm Tobias. Like, and everybody's like...
and you're Tobias. Because it turns out... that the leader of the factionless is his mother.
His really hot mother, Naomi Watts.
I know, right? We were kind of freaked out that she was old enough to be his...
Yeah, your parent. Mom's hot for...
Yeah, totally. Anyway...
And she's got a really nice, shabby, chic apartment. It's like all of this mismatched stuff, but it's like goblets of wine and this really fancy... It's like really fancy mismatched stuff in this completely decayed... room, yeah, because it's factionless and it has to be like, but I think the aesthetic of that really, I thought they did a really good job on the factionless aesthetic.
It's totally like diesel punk as fuck.
The double wide train. I mean, like, yeah. The whole thing is just like, it really fits together well.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I bitch about the utility of a double wide train, yeah. it visually was pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
And it allowed for them to jump between the cars while punching each other.
You chill. So, yeah, so then they are introduced to Evelyn, Naomi Watts, Forrest's mother.
She's President Coyne.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
She's the rebel leader.
She's
who
definitely
wants to
right.
overthrow
she's,
the right. established
she,
order.
She wants. I mean, they're factionless, and they want to overthrow the faction system, like you would, because the faction system clearly does not work for them.
Well, and obviously, if you have a bunch of factionless people, like. It makes no sense to me how, like, they clearly have a large, thriving city full of factionless people who are getting along just fine. Why do you need the factionless system again? Like, why do you have to live in separate, stupid, gray apartments with abnegation? If you could just live in an apartment building with anybody and just, like, there's no reason you would have to segregate like that.
Yeah, whatever. And I also kind of just don't understand Evelyn, because she's understood to be, like a snake, like sly and willing to lie, and she's clearly a terrible mother because she abandoned Four to his abusive father, and you know, and she did it because of some high-minded ideals, I believe, you know, but Four hates her and like will not listen to anything she says. Even though kind of what she says makes sense, you know?
Yeah, it's probably because he's secretly attracted to her. She's so good looking.
You don't even need to go there. Whew. But it is definitely one of those things where the text is clearly understands her to be evil and untrustworthy.
Which she is. She's, I mean, even in the movie, like, she's the way she runs things is pretty sketchy. It's like Warlord sketchy.
Right, but at the same time, like... It doesn't... She's not wrong.
No, I mean, she could be morally right in her crusade and yet still be a horrifically bad leader.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess.
The way she rules, like, her, like, trials, which are just big public shout fests until they all start calling for somebody to be lynched.
But we haven't gotten there yet.
No, I know. I'm just saying, this is obviously how her government works.
Right,
so.
But, I mean, I'm talking about when she's introduced. They're, like, yeah.
No, they're
like
just having a nice dinner.
Right, the whole text is telling us that she's horrible, and there's no evidence of that yet.
Right.
And so I'm just saying that, like, this narrative has a problem with women in authority or something. I don't know what the problem is. Like,
I think a lot of texts have problems with women in authority.
Yeah, because you know, the Kate Winslet character is also clearly evil. And,
right.
And, you know, the Amity lady is maybe the only one who isn't. Until I think she becomes problematic in later ones too.
Oh, well.
Yeah, anyway, it's just whatever. So, yeah, so they're hanging out with the factionless. Meanwhile, we cut to Kate Winslet, who has a puzzle box that was apparently in Triss's childhood home that was being kind of watched over by her parents.
Right. This is like
found this puzzle box.
This is the in the City of Ember.
Yes.
This is that box that was shoved in a closet that everybody forgot about, and then 200 years later, it's like, oops.
Oops. We forgot about this little box a while ago. Yeah. So this is this puzzle box she's found, and apparently has a message from the founders. And Kate Winslet is just hell for leather that she's going to open this damn thing.
Well, because you need a divergent person to open it. Right. And so now it's...
So she needs to find a divergent person who can open this box. And she's burning through divergents because they're like... Because the little, like, ray gun thing is like 10% divergent is apparently not enough.
Well, and then she'll, like, hook up these 10% divergent people to the box, and then they'll die in the process of trying to open it. And she's like, well, what we need to find is more divergents to throw at the box.
Right. So, you know, I'm a little hazy on how this happens, but like...
Well, they decide that they need to go talk to...
Kander. Which is run by Daniel Day Kim.
Yes.
Which is amazing. I love him.
Yeah, well, and I think that was like, you know, sort of a good idea. Like, get the justice system on your side, because like none of this should have worked in the first place. But if you can at least tell them what happened, you know, be honest about it. And they're like, well, we won't trust your honesty. We think you're going to lie to us anyway. And then it comes out that there's some sort of truth serum that they give to that's their hazing ritual, where they give you a truth serum. And it's like, that's how they prove that that's their version of Dauntless jumping into a gaping hole and just sort of hoping there's a net at the bottom, right? Is like being injected with truth serum. Oh no. I mean, if I only ever speak the truth genetically anyway, right. Like, why is that scary? But anyway, so they have this thing, and they're like, well, we never use it outside the faction and whatever, but we'll, of course, use it in this case and stab you with it, and then you'll tell us the truth. And the more you resist telling the truth, the more it hurts, which is just the best little plot device, because, you know, they inject four, and they're like, what happened? And he tells them what happened, and it, like, kind of is uncomfortable, but, he's telling the truth, so it's like, tells the truth. And then they get to Triss, and they're like, what happened? And they start asking all these probing questions, and she could have just said... Like, because she really doesn't want to talk about, like, how she loves Four for some reason. Or she doesn't want to talk about how she...
No. It's there, like, she had to shoot Will in the face. Will.
And, but, I mean, it started with her talking about Four and, like, being resistant to talking about how she loves him. And then they were, like, asking about, like, did you kill anybody? Ooh. And she's, like, you know, resisting because she had just told her friend who's... Mm. That was her friend's boyfriend that she had killed. Mm-hmm. That, you know, oh, I don't know where he went. Boy, that's weird. And so, you know, because clearly she's not divergent enough to also be Kander, because she would have just told the truth, right? But no, she can't do that because she's not, you know, she's mostly dauntless at this point. Anyway, so with the truth serum, she's like, you know, I killed someone. And then the guy's like, what was his name? And she really just doesn't want to tell him, but she could have just been like, yes, I killed someone who was shooting at me, one of the Dauntless people.
Right.
You know, and sort of phrased it in a way that wouldn't lead to these, because she's clearly hiding something. What are you hiding? And when you find out, it's just sort of like, well,
it's also one of those things that, like, it only matters to her. The fact that right. she's being interrogated, like, this is clearly an emotional reality and not a reality.
Right. This is the reality where she's afraid of birds. You know? I mean, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, and so, anyway...
I mean, it matters, because her friend
Right. You know. Christina.
But she's, I mean, this is just one of those dumb things where she's just been like, dude, he came at me and he was under the influence of the serum and I shot him and it's really tough. Mm-hmm. But that's what happened, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, because you could.
Well,
instead of just lying about it.
Right. Well, because the other thing is that, like, I would imagine, like, all of the Dauntless people, not including, you know, the very few who were divergent enough not to be under the mind control thing, all of them, a bunch of them actually did legitimately kill abnegation people, mm-hmm. and they were all fixing to shoot them all in the head. I would imagine that there would be, and they clearly come out of it with their memories intact.
Yeah.
So all of your friends understand what it is to have to do something horrible and not have it be in your control.
Well, and especially because from Will's point of view, like later on, if he had survived, he would have been like, oh my God, I totally killed Triss. Mm-hmm. And he would have felt horrible about it. So mm-hmm. her killing him is just sort of, I mean, it's self-defense at that point. He doesn't have any control over it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, nobody's wrong in that situation.
Right.
You know, but you don't have to lie about it in the first place. But whatever. I'm not a dauntless teenager.
Right.
So.
And also, but anyway, so it's just like there really should be more empathy, but that's not how adolescence works apparently. So, you know, they kind of have candor on their side, except that then, in come the stormtroopers, in come the dauntless people who then dart the fuck out of everybody. And,
This is where they like shoot the divergent gun at her and they're like, oh my God, she's 100%. Like, you didn't know. Come on. Mm-hmm. You had to suspect at that point. Like, she would have been your number one target. But then, so Four shows up and shoots Eric, which is like, you know, oh, I guess he won't be in the third movie.
I was kind of surprised by that too. Cause I was like, you know, he definitely has the whole, like, I'm a shitty bad guy thing going on, and they had to go find another one, and he wasn't as good as that guy.
Yeah. So anyway, they escape, and then there's, like, some sort of mind control disc that makes people jump off of ledges, and it's like the worst kind of hostage thing where it's like, I'm going to keep throwing people off of ledges until you turn yourself in, Triss.
Oh, well, because that's the other thing, is that both Miles, Teller, Peter and Caleb have both defected back to Erudite.
Oh, I didn't realize that they both had. Yeah. But I mean, both. So they're trying to get, I mean, this seems like the dumbest way to get somebody to agree. Cause it's like, I'm going to keep killing people and this is all your fault. And it's like, no, this is your fault. Stop killing people.
Right. But, like, but that was, I believe that was Peter's idea.
That makes sense.
And also Caleb has defected back to Erudite, because I don't know, he is a character who never makes sense to me.
Yeah,
like his choices are just insane.
Well,
like,
he's sort of just like out for himself, you know. I mean, like he doesn't really have
he keeps wanting to believe that Erudite is amazing, despite the fact that they literally shot both of his parents.
Yeah.
But he
also is very smart and understands.
Anyway.
I mean, he's like the apologist for all of this crap. I mean, he tries to get Triss to go along with it. And, you know, I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just sort of gross. So, I mean, when people start throwing themselves off, she's like, okay, I'll turn myself in to stop people from.
Right. So she turns herself in, and Kate Winslet, the leader of Erudite, hooks her up to the murder box, the puzzle box, and it turns out that she's got to go through the initiation simulations for all five factions.
Yeah, which it ends up being kind of funny in practice, because like one of them is like, she, like, for candor, she has to be honest with her mom about something, and I'm like, was that really that hard? Like, you'd think candor would be a little more difficult than, you know, having to just tell somebody the truth. Like, it would have to be, like, something that you really never wanted to say, but
okay,
I just kind of, I didn't get the sense of what she was saying was all that big of a deal. It was I'm glad you're having this conversation.
No.
That was good and therapeutic.
Okay, but I don't think that you've been a teenager in a while.
No, that's
true.
And
I feel like the whole, I mean, I remember having really very upsetting, monumental conversations with my parents at that age and having, you know, the just sort of the realization that they're adults and that they have whole lives and histories and relationships with each other that I have nothing to do with. And, you know, and that being kind of a horrific big deal, like that, that's one of the few things that I thought had an emotional reality to it.
Right.
Is her being honest about her relationship with her mother.
Yeah. But then there's the Dauntless, which was,
jumping off of something and punching somebody.
Flaming building, was it?
A flaming building or possibly.
Or was that that like abnegation? Like she had to like selflessly jump into a burning building to save her mom? It didn't make a lot of sense, yeah. But that's okay. But the Amity one was kind of funny because Amity, like, so this is the last of the ones, right? She goes through all the other. I guess Erudite must have been solving some sort of puzzle.
Because it was. It was definitely like,
how smart are you? And it's like,
okay, it was definitely a murder puzzle. Like, works, but here whatever. We go.
So in the Amity one, it's the Kate Winslet is taunting her in the simulation, not just in real life, but like also in the simulation. That's her. Like, but then she can get out and punch her, and then she fails. But presumably at that point, she would have died like all the other Divergents who failed the test, mm-hmm. but she didn't. For whatever reason, and they're like, well, she just needs a rest. Let's, you know, go back and try again or whatever. That's when they faked her death. She dies.
Yes.
She fake dies.
And, like, my notes, at the time, I wrote, oh, God, I was really amused with myself. Then it turns out Miles Teller was like, LOL, I did a Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, because he's like, now I'm on your side, which is really setting him up well for the last movie.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's just, it goes great. But then they decide that they need to break back in and hook her back up to the simulation to open it up. Like, after she had just fake died, they're like, no, just kidding, let's do it again, only this time without anybody else.
Right, because she wanted to actually, she decides that she actually wants to see what the message is from the Founders.
Right, or whatever's in the Wii. So they break back in, and eventually it turns out that the Amity test isn't overcoming Kate Winslet, mm-hmm. it's overcoming herself, because you know what she really hates is herself.
Yes.
It would have been more believable if it had been her with the longer hair that she had to confront. Because what she has to understand now is that she's, like, cut off her hair, which was so gorgeous.
She has to forgive herself for cutting off all of her beautiful hair.
But that's what she really hates is herself.
I mean, honest to God, that actress, like, I just want to, like, hairbrush her. Just hairbrush her.
Yeah, that's
just
how it works.
Beautiful hair.
But then she unlocks it, and at that same moment, like, everybody else breaks in because they need to be able to see the message, too. So it's like, what's the net effect here? You could have just waited until 4 and the factionless broke in.
Well, whatever.
But either way, whatever. So you break out, you break back in, you hook yourself up, the other people break back in. So now we have a full room of people watching the message, which is basically, congratulations, you know, you've unlocked a tour to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. Here's your golden ticket, and, you know, the Divergent are the best. So,
that was not, let me explain.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay, they were like, all of Chicago is a huge, completely unethical Stanford prison experiment. You guys have all been part of this for like 200 years or whatever. And the goal of this horrifically unethical experiment is to come up with a Divergence. And they don't say why. We'll get into that in the next movie. But the Divergence are the end game, these are the chosen ones. This is what, yes, right. Like, we've gotten this far to get to the chosen one trope.
It worked. There's this Chicago-sized Petri dish that eventually bred itself a little thing, a key to open the box.
Right. And so you need to like coddle them or whatever. And that's it. There's no like, now you need to, you know.
Well, no, they're like, there's a world outside waiting for you. We're out here. Come find us.
We're out here. Come find us.
Because this is the Empire Strikes Back part of the trilogy, mm-hmm. where it sort of we realize that there's a bigger world, and that's sort of how it ends. After Kate Winslet is like, quick, bury the box, execute everybody. We're just going to keep things the way they are, because if there's a world out there, she's completely powerless in it.
Right. Like, yeah, it doesn't
work.
She's
not divergent. She just wants to be in control, which is fine. But then, like, everybody... the factionless stop her, and then they wideband the message to the city.
Right.
And of course, it's got, like, the projector screens on all the old decrepit buildings, because that's what you do in a post-apocalyptic
fashion. Hey, it looks
society.
Really sweet.
It does look really sweet, and it's, like, a great narrative device. But then all of a sudden, everybody's like, let's all go run to the wall, because, like, they can't obviously get on the train. Because it doesn't stop. And nobody has any cars except Dauntless, who has Humvees, and everybody just starts running to the wall.
Yeah, no, they totally, like, they're like, everybody...
Oh my god, there's a world out there? Let's go to the wall! Let's walk! Let's just walk with... Well, we won't pack a lunch. They're not hobbits. They're not going to get a loaf of bread and, you know, their traveling stick.
No.
They're going to walk to the wall.
Yeah. And then that's the end.
That's it. They're like, I wonder what's out there. Well, I don't know. We won't know until we walk there.
Yeah. Yeah, so the end?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a shorter movie because less happened, you know? It was just sort of the in-between glue before you get to the next movie, and it was just like...
In terms of rewatchability, this is very, very low. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just saw it, and I've forgotten most of it already. Because, you know, so much of it is going to, open the murder puzzle, and so it's all of this unreal, like, okay, so when you're reading a certain kind of B-grade science fiction, you know, people have dreams, and they're always written, like, completely gormlessly. I don't know. It's always like, super obvious psychology that is, like, there's, like, this bright red flaming arrow that points to whatever your issue is, right?
Right, they're never, like, real dreams, which is, like, yeah, and then my hand fell off.
Right,
and then
I turned into a frog.
There was a giant blue square following me.
And you were there, and then it turned out I was with a bunch of friends, but they were the dream friends, not real people.
And then my room started filling up with water, and I had to swim in it, but I could breathe underwater, and it was actually really fun.
Yeah, and then I learned to fly. Yeah, I mean, real dreams are just bananas.
They're pretty weird.
Sometimes they have narrative, but a lot of times they just don't. And, but in fiction, they're often extremely, like... allegorical in a way that is exhausting to me.
Well, because if you're having a dream in fiction, it is inevitably a plot device to tell you something about the inner state of that character without having to actually
do any work. Right. And so that whole middle section when she's trying to open the murder puzzle is just one dream sequence after another.
Yeah, it's like, let's see what she's made of psychologically. Which actually, I mean, it does give you some insight into, like, you know, what do you fear the most? Like, who do you hate the most? Like, all of that stuff. And it's fine and all. It's just that, you know, it would have been a better movie if we'd known all that beforehand.
I guess.
So we could actually be worried and invested in the because I mean when she goes into it, there's, like, really kind of no question that she's going to be able to do it, you know. I mean, she's divergent, she's the chosen one, of course she just, it's effortless for her,
but I just,
you know. And it's like, until she actually, like, fails the Amity thing, which felt a little contrived. She's like, well, I'm just gonna, I know this is the Amity test and I'm supposed to, like, love my neighbor and be peaceful, but I'm gonna punch you instead, you know. I mean, I feel like a divergent wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's fair to say yes, and I know that she's going to get through it, because I think that there are plenty of fictions that I've watched where I know that it's going to turn out okay, but I can still have very real feelings of emotional terror for what they're going through.
Yeah, no, that's,
like,
true.
Like, just because this one totally didn't doesn't mean that it's not possible to do, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I was reading something recently where, like, it was a romance novel, and I know it's going to end well, but I was so upset when the second act turn happened, and there were stakes and people were hurt, and it was bad.
Yeah.
But
I mean, as a, like, so this whole movie's point was to prop Triss up as the chosen one. She's not just divergent, she's the divergent.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one who is, like, divergent enough to be able to pull this off. So it's like, this is the you know, her ascending to heaven, you know, and coming into her own as a fully realized human that incorporates all of these different mm-hmm. aspects of humanity mm-hmm. and that sort of just sort of ends with a, you know, and hey, yeah. there's a bigger world outside. Let's go join the world. Like, you know, in the metaphor of the bubble being the childhood and you're breaking through the bubble. Mm-hmm. Like, literally that's what's happening is she's becoming a fully realized, adult, well-rounded individual mm-hmm. who's ready to go meet the world. And it's like, what's gonna happen out there?
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's fine. And it makes sense the way that it works out. But, I mean,
it just is so unsatisfying.
It's really unsatisfying.
I didn't feel like she wasn't going to make it, you know, and there was just so much stuff happening in between the rescues and the captures and then the re-rescues and then the recaptures or the, you know, I guess we'll just break in and finish the test anyway, because
one of the things about it is that, like, you know, there's this constant telegraphing that she feels responsible for her parents' deaths. But I think that that's not. I think that that's possible.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it, you know, her expressions of grief are very one note. I mean, and grief is complicated and textured and it really changes day to day. And the way you experience that, lose two parents right in front of you in a day. And then just feeling like you're responsible for those deaths. Like that's almost an avoidance mechanism.
No, I know.
There's so much more going on.
It's enough to make you want to turn into some sort of criminal vigilante, put on a bat mask or maybe get some birds tattooed and become Bird Woman. I mean,
yeah,
she's Batman.
No, you're right. Except that not whatever. Yeah. So it was fine. It was a fine movie, but I don't really feel like I need to see it again anytime soon. I would watch Divergent over this one any day of the week because it's just it's just not interesting.
The nice thing about Divergent was that you could watch it as a standalone movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you could almost watch this as a standalone movie if you didn't have to watch Divergent first. And like Empire Strikes Back, this is a middle movie. It's pretty clear that there's another movie coming, even though it ends on the high note of like, I wonder what's out in the world waiting for us. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, I mean,
yeah,
sure, it's over.
It's just,
but
yeah.
I don't feel like I would need to watch this again, even though I might want to watch Divergent again.
Yeah,
like, I feel like I've watched enough of this movie that I could be like, yeah, I know what happens. It's like watching The Matrix. I mean, it's too bad they never made any sequels.
There's so many things like that.
Yeah, like Highlander. It's too bad there was never a second Highlander movie.
Oh God, where is that? Are we gonna bring that up every podcast? I think getting
Did
there.
We?
Oh, it's happened before.
Well, maybe we can call the podcast "It's Too Bad They Never Made a Second Highlander Movie."
That'd be really great. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I kind of feel like that's a wrap.
Yeah, I'm glad we're done with this movie.
All right, high five.
High five.
Thank you.